Good evening, and welcome to our assembly. If you think back in your life on the things that have happened to you, that have had the most impact on you, the things that meant the most to you, it nearly always has something to do with other people. Nearly always has something to do with something that they have done, or more often, what they've said to you. Sometimes those things that they've said to you are things that made you happy, made you feel better about yourself, gave you joy. Sometimes the things that stick in your head, the things that you can't quite forget, are bad things. And again, many times it has to do with something that somebody said to you, something that they said to you that made you feel terrible, made you feel small and unwanted or unloved. And on a day-to-day basis, that's often the case. The things that people say to us make our day better or they make them worse. That's just the reality of this world. We are so dependent upon, and rightfully so, relationships. We are social creatures. We have families, friends, social circles, and we feed upon and need those connections. And they are largely based on verbal communication. And so something that's so necessary and vital to our well-being and is so crucial to our health and happiness. It all comes down to words. Things that we say to each other. Now, of course, those things that we say need to be backed up by actions. There's no question about that. But very often, it's the words that affect us most. I want to talk for a few moments tonight about this passage of Colossians 4, verse 6. Where Paul uses the analogy or the expression of seasoning your words. Seasoning your words. Read the passage with me. Colossians 4 and verse 6. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned as it were with salt, so that you may know how you should respond to each person. Jesus Christ came to the world to save us. Save us because we needed saving, because we're sinners. But being saved is more than just having our sins taken away. It also has to do with learning how to behave. That's being saved too. We're not just saved from our past, we're saved to a future, to a way of life, to a way of being. And much of that way of life and much of that way of being has to do with what we say. Because that's our impact on the world. That's how we affect other people, what we say. Therefore, to be saved, to be a Christian, to be a child of God in Jesus Christ, is to be a person who constantly gives attention to what we say. And if we're not controlling our speech, we're fooling ourselves. Pure and undefiled religion. To keep oneself unspotted, unspoiled by the world. To be a person who has a positive influence in a spiritual way on the people around us. That is what we are about. And so Paul's admonition here to the Colossian brethren should be taken to heart. We should do exactly what Paul says here. Breaking this passage down, there's a lot in it. If you think about it, first he says, let your speech... You know, you can't control what other people say. A lot of times they react to what you say, and in that sense you have some control over it. But in truth, you can only control what you say. And so very often we modify our speech depending on what somebody else is saying to us, whether we like it or not, whether we perceive it as negative or positive. But that's not the admonition. The admonition is not respond to people the way that they talk to you. That wouldn't do you any good at all. Let your speech, you have control of that. 100% absolute control over what you say, unless you're drugged or something. You are talking in your sleep. Maybe you don't have control over that, but you know what I'm talking about. You can control what you say. Well, you need to let your speech be a certain way. And let means do. Do this. Let your speech always, and that is a tough requirement. Always. You can't ever let your guard down. You can't ever blow off steam and just say, well, I get 5 minutes a day where I can just say whatever I want. We use this excuse is really what it is. Is that, well, I wasn't thinking, or it was an unguarded moment. Always. We cannot allow ourselves or afford ourselves the luxury of not being careful in what we say, ever. Because you never know what those few words that you say in that unguarded moment, in that uncareful moment, you never know the damage that they're going to do. And they can do a lot of damage. Always, let your speech always be with grace. And man, that's a powerful start to that sentence. Grace. Grace is a word that really means favor. It means the kind of thing that benefits another person's welfare. It has a positive impact and meant to be positive. And it doesn't happen by accident. What Paul is saying here, and a lot of the passages we're going to read in the course of this lesson are telling us, is that it's a deliberate thing. We must deliberately intend that the things that we say have a positive influence and impact upon the people around us. Always be with grace. Because if that's not our intention, if the things that we say are just reactions, they're just random, running at the mouth, it's not going to be with grace. Grace is always a deliberate thing. It's a thing that is intentional. Always let your speech be with grace, seasoned as it were with salt. And this here's the deliberate aspect of it. When you season something with salt, unless you spill the salt shaker, which you should not do, it should always be measured. You're saying, okay, this needs to taste better. I'm going to put some salt on this because salt does make things taste better. So I'm going to put a measured amount of salt on this with the intent of the effect that it will have on the taste of this food. Well, the same thing is true with your speech. When you talk to somebody, deliberately, consciously, let that speech always be with grace, seasoned as it were with salt. You are saying, okay, I'm going to carefully word this with the intent that it will move or affect this person in a way that will be godly, that will reflect well on the Lord whom I claim to serve, and will draw the best response, the response that God wants to see in this person, that will draw that out of them. And so my words need to be carefully chosen for that effect. And this sounds like a lot of responsibility, and it is. So that you may know, and here's the thing. Very often, since our things that we say are said uncarefully, we don't know the effect that they're going to have. Oftentimes, we don't learn what the effect is going to be until after we've said them. And we think, well, I didn't mean to get that response. I wasn't trying to say that. I wasn't trying to communicate to that. Well, here's the rub. You need to know. You need to think about it before you say it. And think about what the reaction is going to be. And so as when you season something with salt, you taste it a little bit. Say, that needs a little more salt. And you put a little more salt in and you taste it. Say, that's about the right amount of salt. Well, you need to know. How do you taste your words before you say them? Well, you think about them. You think about your words. You think about how you might respond if someone said those words to you. You think about how Jesus would feel about those words that you're saying. Would he say those words? Would he admire or love you for saying them? And then when you know, or to the best of your ability you know, then you say them. Now again, this indicates a lot of thought before you say things, and that's exactly the idea. You should know how you should respond. And speech is a very often response. And we often think that, well, I said what I said because they said what they said. And so they said this, and so I am warranted. I am excused for saying what I said because they said what they said. Well, no, there's a way to respond. And you need to know that the way that you're responding is with grace and seasoned with salt. You need to know that. I'm responding. And you need to know how you're responding fits the bill of what Paul is laying on us here. Know how you should respond to each person. And people are different. This is the kind of thought you need to put into things. You know, some people can take certain things, and some people can't take them. Some people can take a joke. Some people can't take a joke at all. Some people can take some criticism. Some people can't take criticism. some people can, you can be funny with certain people. You can't be funny with other people. I mean, it's just the way they are. People are that way. And you cannot use the excuse that, well, I did not intend. Well, all of your statements need to be intentional. And so you need to know a person. You need to get to know a person. You need to be guarded in what you say to a person, how you talk to a person until you get to know them. And as you get to know them and you kind of get a read on them and know how they react to certain things, you can modify or moderate what you say depending on what you think is most effective. And all of that is in that verse. All of it. You can see that, can't you? It's important that we try to say the right thing at the right time. It's important because we're not here just to avoid pitfalls or like we're walking through a minefield trying not to blow ourselves up. It's not just about trying to avoid confrontations and trying to avoid making people angry. We're supposed to engage. You can't just avoid. You can't just say, well, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to avoid conversation, avoid contact with people. That's no good. We're not here to avoid. We're here to engage and to interact. And to say things that are positive and constructive. And so it's very important that we think about how what we say is so effective and so essential to say the right thing at the right time. And there's a few of these passages that you're familiar with, but it's easy to think about this if you call these proverbs to mind. For instance, a man has joy, Proverbs 15:23. A man has joy and an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word. We've all experienced that. We've all experienced the moment when we were discouraged or had a problem or was lonely or desperate, and somebody said something to us, and how helpful that was and how uplifting that was. That's a beautiful thing. And you can only do that with any degree of consistency by paying attention to what people are going through. And in a moment, be able to say something that might help them. So it's not just an accidental thing, it's a deliberate thing. Proverbs 25:11, like apples of gold and settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. And there's a little more to this analogy in my mind than just simply describing something that's beautiful. Apples of gold in a silver setting is a work of art. It's a work of craftsmanship. A jeweler will form and shape this apple of precious metal and the setting in which it is placed and placing it in the setting and then presenting it as something that is admirable and enjoyable. And that's the way that our speech needs to be. We need to think about, okay, I'm saying this Okay, I want to have a certain effect, and I want it to be good. And how am I going to word this? How am I going to say this to have that good effect? Part of the art of knowing what to say and when to say it is when to not say anything at all. A big part of having good verbal interactions with people is to know when to shut your mouth and not say anything. That's a big part of it. I struggle with it because I'm a talker, and I'm always wanting to be interesting and funny. That may come as a surprise to you, but I do want to be funny. And so, you know, I've always got a comment. I've always got something to say. I've always been a little bit of a smart aleck. And that's something that I've struggled with. There's a lot of situations where you don't need to say anything. You just don't need to say anything. Think about this. Proverbs 10 and verse 19. When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable, but he who restrains his lips is wise. You can't be quiet all of the time. You have to talk to people. You have to say things to people. But you don't always have to say something. And to a certain degree, when you're saying something all the time, then nothing you say is particularly impactful. But when you're more measured in choosing what to say, it has more of an impact. Proverbs 23:9, do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. You know, there are certain situations, certain people that you shouldn't talk to. I mean, that's a harsh thing to have to say about somebody, but it's true. There are some people that you can't have good interactions with, and you don't. It may be a character thing. It may be a personality conflict. Whatever it is, it's often that person is a fool. And they just don't process things well. They don't understand. They are insecure in their own feelings about themselves and about the world. And they take everything in a negative way, even if you intend for it to be positive. You can't give them advice. You can't counsel them because they'll just take it as criticism and attack. And they're just people like that. And so the best thing to do in those circumstances is just say as little as you possibly can get away with. That's unfortunately a reality, but it's a bit of wisdom that the Lord teaches us. Job 42 is a situation in which Job acknowledges that he said too much. At the end of his interaction with God, you know, he says, who is this who hides counsel without knowledge? And in essence, he's quoting God about himself. And he says, therefore, I have declared that which I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. And there are circumstances in which we just don't know what we're talking about. And if you suspect that you don't know what you're talking about, you shouldn't talk. You should just not say anything. Now, there are situations like with Job where you feel very passionate about something. You feel very emotionally stirred, very upset. That doesn't give you a right to just say whatever just because you're upset about something. Now, we should regard with patience and understanding people who say unhelpful things in the midst of emotional reaction, but we ourselves should try not to be that person. We should say, I don't know why this is happening to me, and I don't know why this person did this, and I'm interpreting it one way, but maybe I'm getting that wrong, and I don't understand what's going on, so I just won't make any accusations. Because we may have to do like Job, who repents, closes his mouth, puts his hand over his mouth, and says, I said too much, I shouldn't have said that. And so, think about that. Think about moments like with Job, where maybe you don't really understand. Maybe you need to collect more data. Maybe you need to ask more questions before you make some kind of declaration or statement about something that you're going to have to eat your words about later on. Matthew 7 and verse 4. Jesus says, how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck of your eye, and behold, the log is in your own eye. And this is an instance of somebody saying something, right? And the statement, let me take the speck out of your eye, it is a statement of criticism. It's a judgment. It's an observation about a problem that person has. And they may have that problem. And it may be a legitimate observation that you've made that they have that problem. But you're not the person to say it because you got a log in your eye. And if you don't have good moral standing to be criticizing somebody else, you don't need to be doing it. Don't say anything. Now, you don't leave it at that. You know, Jesus goes on to say, get the log out of your own eye, clean up your own life, take care of your problem, and then you can go and talk to that person. But there's moments in your life when you don't need to be saying that to that person. And that's just the case. Matthew 12 and verse 24, but when the Pharisees heard it, they said, this man casts out demons only by Beelzebul, the ruler of demons. And what they're reacting to is that the Jewish people, they're seeing Jesus cast out demons, and they're saying, this has got to be the Son of God. And see, they didn't think it through. They just had to come up with something. They just had to come up with some objection, some way of explaining why Jesus was doing what he was doing, because it didn't make any sense in their book, because on the one hand, clearly Jesus was casting out demons, but on the other hand, he just couldn't be the Messiah. And so they had to come up with something, and so they came up with this ridiculous accusation that on the surface of it is ridiculous. But you know, in the heat of the moment, when you don't understand something, and you don't like something, and you're casting about for some way to explain it, chances are you're not going to say something very helpful. And so if you're having a moment of what's called cognitive dissonance, where reality doesn't seem to match your view of the world, you need to reassess either that reality or your view of the world, but that's not a moment in which to make bold accusations. You need to come up with a reasonable way of rectifying these things. And so that's something we always need to be careful about. If you're struggling with something and it's setting you off, you stop and think that thing through before you start saying something. Matthew 12:36, and I say to you that every careless word, this is what Jesus says to them in response to what they said, every careless word that men shall speak, they shall render account for in the day of judgment. And that's sobering, you know, it makes you stop and think. Careful words are so much better than careless words. And in the end, you hardly ever regret not saying something. I'm not saying that doesn't happen. It does happen. Sometimes you say, I wish I'd said something. And that's a real thing. And you need to be thinking about when I need to say something and be willing to say it. But more often than not what we regret is the thing we said. I regret that I said that. Careless words are not good words. So be thinking about that. Here's another instance of that. Jesus on the Mount Transfiguration. There's Jesus and Moses and Elijah transfigured before Peter, John, and James. And Peter doesn't know what to say. He says so right there. He did not know what to answer. He did not know. He did not know what to answer. Didn't stop him from speaking. He said something anyway. And what he said was unhelpful and not right. So what should he have said? Nothing. He should have said nothing. If he didn't know what to say, he should have said nothing. And that's the way that works. Timothy 1 and verse 7, wanting to be teachers of the law, even though they do not understand either what they are saying or the matters about which they make confident assertions. And we don't need to be that person either. Especially in a context of teaching someone the Word of God, or teaching them, or especially in the context of an argument or an engagement about something that's religious, you need to get your ducks lined up in a row. You need to be humble enough to recognize your limitations and learn and get confident about what you've learned. Not just confident about your opinion. Everybody's confident about their opinion. You need to be confident about what the Word of God actually says by a careful examination and study. And then you can be confident in saying certain things. And until that point, you don't need to be doing that. James 1:19, this you know, my beloved brethren, but let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. Always be slow to speak when you are angry. Anger is not a good moment in which to say something that's with grace seasoned with salt. It's more often than not seasoned with something else. Although we use that language, salty. He's salty. The kids say that. They do. See, I know that. He's being salty. Well, I think that's what they call James. Grandkids call him salty. Time to be silent. If you don't know what to say, if you don't understand the topic, when somebody is suffering, that's always a moment where you have to be really careful. Because they're emotional and they're distraught. And I'm not saying say nothing, just be careful in what you say. Always say something. Don't think that you have to come up with some kind of elaborate and profound explanation for why they're suffering or why this thing happened to them. Nothing of the sort is likely to be helpful. You can express your empathy, condolences, your own sorrow. But so very often, things that we say to people in those circumstances aren't particularly helpful. So be very careful about that. When discussion is pointless, if you talked about something and you just disagree about it, so very often at that point, the only thing that happens in a discussion is people get angry. It just gets heated, and you need to back off of that, stop that, shut that down, step back, think it through. If you think it's worth pursuing, then maybe come at it from a different angle. But I've seen this. I've been in a lot of meetings, and people have a disagreement about something. And they get into this mode of defending their position, and it gets heated. And, you know, the only thing that you can do when you climb that ladder is to climb back down off that ladder at some point, because you got to get along with these people. If you're working with them or if you have a relationship with them, and so best to stop climbing and just, you know, back down, because it's pointless. Very often the things that people argue about are pointless. When you're in the wrong, certainly, stop talking. Stop defending yourself. You know you're in the wrong. The best thing in that circumstance, say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Leave it at that. Don't keep explaining why you were wrong. Don't keep excusing yourself and showing why maybe you could have been right, because that's not helpful. If you're in the wrong, just say, I was wrong. There's no excuse. There's no explanation. I was just wrong. I was thinking wrong. I acted wrong. I'm sorry. That's it. It's a simple thing, but we find it very difficult to do. And of course, when you're angry, be silent. And finally, work at controlling what you say. Controlling what you say. And that's a very difficult thing to do. Principles to guide our speech. Have important things worked out ahead of time. If you know something is tense or difficult, or if you know that it's something that you're going to need to carefully explain, then think about it ahead of time and work out what you're going to say and work out your points, because you may only have one shot at this, and things may go sideways real quickly, and you don't want that. And so you need to be really thoughtful about what you're going to say, especially in a tense situation. So work it out ahead of time. Say things that actually respond to what another person has said. This is so key in any conversation or any discussion or interaction with people. Listen to them. Listen to what they're saying. So very often, the things that we say don't have anything to do with what they're saying or with what they want or what their concerns are, because we're just talking about what our concerns are and what we want to see happen. And that's not helpful in talking to people. So you just need to stop talking and start asking and say, now what is it you're saying? And what are your concerns? And how can I respond to that? And that's a real big part of engaging people in a good conversation, is listen, repeat what they're saying so that you know that you're saying what they're saying. And put yourself in their place. See things from their point of view. It's so essential that you do that. And always speak with love. And this is key. Grace, love, compassion. And that's part of what it means to put yourself in their position, because you're seeing it from their point of view, because you understand now how they feel about it and what their needs are. And when you do that, then it's more likely that what you're going to say is going to be helpful to those needs. and perceived that way and understood that way. The way that you even word what you say, the attitude that you have, the expressions that you use, the demeanor that you display is going to be more sympathetic and more likely to be welcoming to that person. And so very often we say what we say without love, without any love at all, and that's not helpful. Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, harsh words stirs up anger. And again, Ephesians 4:29, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for the edification according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. And there's that word. You know, you can give grace. You certainly can give grace. And even in what you say, you can give grace. 1 Peter 3:15, but sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account of the hope that is in you. And being ready to make a defense is something you do ahead of time. You think things through. You prepare an explanation. And Colossians 4:6, finally, let your speech always be with grace, seasoned as it were with salt, so that you may know how you should respond to each person. That's my sermon tonight.